I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché. You go
right. That's right. It's time for Touché here, regular segment every Monday night here on 720 WGN The Download. Charles Lipson and Tracy Seffel in for Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling tonight. Of course, Professor Lipson, a regular here on WGN, also professor of political science at the University of Chicago, contributor to Real Clear Politics. Also, Tracy Seffel is a regular as well, and she was a one-time staffer for Hillary Clinton's campaign back in what would have been 2008, right?
Yeah.
And also a... I would say, what would you call yourself? A consultant? Are you a consultant or are you a...
I am a consultant.
All right.
I consult.
She's a consultant. Good to see you both. All right. Let's get to this. So we got a lot to talk about. Whether, I mean, tonight, the four things I think we should talk about are obviously the inauguration week. I think we need to talk about NATO, Brexit, and Russia because we have Professor Lipson here, of course. Let's talk about the cabinet and, of course, the Cubs, right? Why don't we do that in order? Inauguration week, it started off, I mean, there's been a lot of jokes about, you know, whether or not the Bruce Springsteen cover band's going to play or not. But this is a bigger thing. There are planned marches around the inauguration all weekend long. What can we expect from this? Is this going to go sort of a normal kind of inauguration as we've seen in the past?
I think that you want to draw a sharp distinction between protesting who the person is who's taking office and his policies or likely policies on the one hand, and the legitimacy of a peaceful transfer of power. And I feel like we've had some rocky transfers beginning with Bush Gore. The one with Obama was very easy, and the only person who really challenged the legitimacy was Trump himself, all the statements about
back where, in the day.
Where, you know, what goes around comes around. But it is a very dangerous thing in a democracy, a very deeply divided democracy as we are, to have people saying that he is not a legitimate president, because just like when Harry Reid blew up the old 60-vote rule in the Senate and people said, this is a mistake because you are not always going to be in the majority and Charles Schumer is going to have to live with the consequences of that now. People who are saying this is not legitimate, there will come a Democratic president, and it would be an awful thing.
But this is not just sort of on a whim. I mean, you're hearing critics talk about, you know, when we have intelligence reports about other countries interfering in the election. I mean, I think that you'll see the Trump camp all come back to, well, we won fair and square, or we won because, you know, no voting machines were hacked. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a larger idea of the forces that were at play, whether it be a foreign nation or our own FBI, as we see, that are getting in the way of the other side, Democrats in this case, sort of accepting the result.
Well, we'll never know the extent to which Russia's meddling affected an outcome. We'll just never know. And I think for some people, that's hard to swallow. I think for others, and an increasing number of Democrats, it's a reality that this man will be our president on Friday. And for all of the people who are now saying they're not going to attend, just on my way to the studio, I saw another congressman said he's not going either. I mean, the numbers are growing. And so I think what a lot of people will be both seeing and thinking about on Friday is the distinction between the celebratory aspect of this peaceful transition of mm-hmm. power and the somber aspect of it. And the somber part is the ritualistic piece, the hand on the Bible and the oath. The celebratory part, I think, is fair for people to be turned off by that. It is fair.
Now, let's talk about, because there's been a lot of protests and plans since the day after election, especially when it comes to the Women's March, what we've heard so much about happening not only here in Washington, D.C., or in Washington, but here in Chicago, other places. This has been a part of the election storyline that has almost been ignored. The idea of Donald Trump winning the election and in the same time in his campaign offending women essentially 100% across
daily.
The board daily. But the idea that this has not been a storyline that has come up in the last 2 or 3 months, Do they have will people come out in numbers to sort of grab the attention that women in this country are still angry about the results, not just the results, but the way that this campaign was held?
It's extraordinary just how many people are committing to participate, whether it's in Washington, where you've got busloads and Amtrak trains and people who are, you know, actually flying out there from here and elsewhere. There are any number of people that I know in Washington who would have liked to have left town for inauguration, but they're stuck there now because they have so many friends coming into town. People are on couches and floors, and there's so many people committing to going. But you're right, Justin, that around the country, it's fascinating. It's going to be really a story to see what happens here in Chicago. And of course, globally, every day there's additional countries who are going to have some event of some kind. And the enormity of this is made all the more interesting by its origin, which was just a energized social media aspect. This was not a product of national organizations and a big strategy. This was a very clear ground up.
I think that protest marches are just fine, and this has got a, I know a lot of people who are going to be in them and so forth. Again, I think that the distinction I'd like to draw is between people who are concerned about him, concerned about his policies, concerned about things he has done, and people who say this is an illegitimate transfer of power. I guess I would like to ask you a question. Yeah. I'd like to ask you a question. I just saw today that a pro-life group, which had been listed among the groups that would be marching, has been asked, been tossed out of the march. They won't be allowed to march.
I think that's actually ongoing. I don't know that there's a resolution quite yet, but it's a distinction between the protest march element and women who are wanting to assert principles and progressive values and beliefs, and they want to include as many people and as many voices as possible.
Consistent with their beliefs, but not people who disagree with them,
right? It's so important to remember that this is not a product of a Washington, D.C., you know, women's organization strategy.
This is ground up.
This is a really important set of
voices. That's right, but what it echoes, it seems to me, is something that we've seen a lot on college campuses, is that once you know that you're doing social justice, you have a right to tell other people to be quiet. And I think it's an interesting issue, and I'm not talking about my substantive views on this. I'm just asking about inclusiveness, because we've just seen a lot of exclusiveness.
Well, and inclusiveness is not easy.
There you go. Tracy Seffel, Charles Lipson in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more Touche here on The Download. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
All right, Touche continues. Professor Charles Lipson, Tracy Seffel in studio tonight, and for Dave and Chris. Okay, so I am fascinated. The story that grabbed me this weekend, I mean, there was a lot. The Saturday and Sunday, the Congressman Lewis Twitter storm was crazy. But the interview that Donald Trump did for a German newspaper, where he essentially said that NATO was obsolete, has garnered a lot of, obviously, a lot of attention all the way up to Merkel. I mean, everybody really getting into the conversation of what Donald Trump's international stance is when it comes to his allies and what happens in Europe. Charles, is it reason for concern for NATO allies that he's talking like this to a foreign newspaper?
As Gabby Hayes used to say, darn tootin'. this is really a source of great concern. The Atlantic Alliance is the core of the United States international commitments. It's taken 50 plus years to build. There is a problem. It actually should be bringing NATO closer together. The fact that that Russia is beginning to act in such an aggressive way normally would bring them to rely more on the U.S. But here's the problem. There are really two problems I want to call your attention to. The first is that when you're such a big powerful country with such a big interest there, it's hard to get the smaller ones to pay their fair share. So one of the ways you might get them to pay is to threaten that you won't protect them unless you pull out.
Which he's done that. He's
but
done
the
that a couple
second
times.
Thing, but in doing that, you actually, to make the threat credible, you actually have to shake the alliance to its core. That's bad. The second thing that people should be aware of is that a world order was built up in the late 1940s. It continued through the fall of the Soviet Union. After the Soviet Union fell, there was a kind of an agreement that all nations participated in. And what you've seen over the past 10 years is two big challenges to that, and maybe more. But one is from Russia. And what they've said is, in effect, the idea that Europe had a stable territorial boundaries that could not be changed by force is not something we agree with. We will challenge that. And China is challenging in the Far East. You have Iran challenging
Isn't
in
that
the
just
Middle
part,
East.
It feels like that's part of the course every single year that
exactly.
these countries like to challenge.
But
and we
what
be ready
I think
to...
you're getting now is pushback from the Americans. And what the Americans under Trump are in effect saying is, we want to act in a tougher way. But two things. We want our allies to pay their share, and we don't want to stick around for long, costly military engagements in the Middle East and elsewhere.
It's interesting. I mean, with Tracy, let me – I mean, what, as a layman, as someone who does not really understand much about international politics, that's why I have Professor Lipson on.
Classes in session.
Yeah, classes in session. But when you have the last couple of weeks where it's just been everything Russian, and the idea that Russia has been involved in some way in intelligence reports, wants to let everybody know that there's these rumors that they have a dossier on Trump. Does that start to sort of erode the trust when you hear stories about, well, maybe NATO should be obsolete when you're talking about Russia? Do you start to question whether or not Trump is being on the up and up?
That is a very unintentionally funny question. Sorry, Justin, but you're presuming that there was a baseline of trust to begin with, and I'm not sure there ever has been. I mean, he's parroting Putin talking points in what he's saying about NATO. It's you could match them up side by side and see that. I believe for the Republican Party and the Republican establishment and these people that he has put around him, from Bannon to Priebus to Pence, they have an obligation to stand up and say, you're crazy pants. This is not going to happen. And we're going to dial things back and be the sort of, you know, you can still be a militaristic hawk Republican type person, but you cannot rock the world order in the way that he seems to so frivolously do with his tweets.
Is there a faction in the Republican Party that wants to rock the world order? I mean, is he representing an area when he says that NATO's obsolete?
I don't think so. I think that Tillerson and Mattis really did, in fact, push back pretty hard on that. I thought what he said about Putin and about Merkel was a bit misinterpreted. At least the way I interpreted it, was he's going to start off with friendly relations, and he's a really transactional guy. If they live up to what he's expecting, good. And if not, then he'll turn on a dime. And in fact, what he said in the press conference about Putin was, I want to have a good relationship. I hope we can have a good relationship, but it'll depend on what kind of actions he takes. I think within the Republican Party, there is a faction that, and it's traditionally been the Midwest, that does not want to see very long-term overseas engagement that's costly, unending, and so forth. But I just don't know. I don't think he's responding to that. I think that's his view.
Tracy, let me turn to the cabinet nominees. We've seen all the confirmation hearings in the last the couple days here, last week leading into today. A myriad of, I guess, successes. You had some that were, oh, okay, this is going to, and then some are like, oh, I don't know, like Marco Rubio and Rex Tillerson and even Price today, there were some that didn't go well. And talk about, I mean, what do you think of this cabinet and how it's being put together? From a Democratic side, I mean, is this the kind of stuff that you expected from a Trump, or is this something more?
Well, as a Democrat, as a former staff person for the National Party, I know that many Democrats believe you have an obligation to be opposed to all of these people for any number of reasons. You know, there's an entire war room in D.C. right now dedicated to just getting out the facts about these nominees, particularly the bad facts. But I believe, and this is a contrarian view among Democrats, that we're wasting our time to really go full-throated protests on each and every nominee. I believe that we should be, you know, really training our sights on whether it's a Tillerson. You know, there are certainly, there's an A-list of people that I think are worthy of sincere and engaged opposition. But Democrats, we can't win. Even if we are opposed to all of these nominees, they're going to be confirmed. That is the mathematics of this all. Mm-hmm. So I say, let's put a little strategy behind this, because we've got a long way to go.
What I think Tracy's very smart on this. I think that's exactly right. I've been writing about it, that I think they're just throwing things at the wall to see what sticks. But you can certainly see why they're going to be opposed to Sessions. The African-American community and civil rights issues are vital. Certainly, you can today, Martin Luther King Day, it's especially on our minds, and it's a huge constituency. The environmentalists are all going to be opposed to Scott Pruitt at EPA. That's a vital Democratic constituency. Betsy DeVos at Department of Education really backs school choice, charters, privatization.
Everything but public.
And so these are absolute core issues for Democrats and core constituencies. Those they will go to the mat on. And I think that the issue with Tom Price is vital, because a lot of women's reproductive health issues as well as insurance issues come up.
Okay, we only have a couple moments. Let's change to the happy, warm, fuzzy part. Barack Obama hosts the Chicago Cubs. Tracy, you're a huge Cubs fan. Talk about what it meant to see those two forces together at the White House today.
Oh, it was so fantastic. And even Obama as a Sox fan, you could tell he was kind of into it today. I was so proud of the team and the field staff and the front office. And they all just looked sort of young and nervous and adorable. And I loved every minute of it. I loved most of all the way that the president brought sports and politics back together. And I think a lot of people need to hear something like that this week, this very strange week that we're in. It was glorious.
Well, boy, this city really came together around the great Cubs team. And it looks like, you know, it didn't look like a fluke. It looks like a team that's built to last. And it was just wonderful to see them there in the White House. But presidency has, in addition to a political dimension, has a kind of king or queen dimension. And this was like you're visiting Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
And I love those parts of it. I thought that it's one of the things that President Obama did the best.
Yeah, he did.
Throughout his presidency, time after time, he represented the best elements of how we want to see ourselves.
Dignified. And let's remember these comments, Professor, because I think down the road we will have a contrast.
Different kind of thing.
Yes.
That's where we got to leave it. Tracy Seffel, Professor Charles Lipson, thanks so much for being here, you guys, and subbing in for Touche. We'll have you guys on the program soon.